You're listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio. Only here, lastwordonsports.com.
What's up, Internet? My name is Matt Pollard, and you are listening to Last Word Soccer Club Radio, only here, lastwordonsoccer.com, powered by Last Word on Sports Incorporated, the Beautiful Game Network, and Roughneck Scars. We have got a great show for you tonight. Daniel Sperry, my good friend. After this past weekend, Sporting Kansas City dealt LAFC their first ever loss at Bank of California Stadium in competitive play. They now have the first ever win at Mercedes-Benz Arena against Atlanta. They had the first ever win by a visiting team at LAFC, and apparently Wayne Rooney is in better shape than I am. What black magic is Peter Vermes using, and is it the same black magic that Wayne Rooney used against Will Johnson this past weekend?
I don't know if you can say Vermes is using black magic. I think he's just getting players healthy, finally. They had a whole lot of injuries, and I think that led to a lot of issues, a lot of squad rotation and stuff going on, so... that's where I'm going to place Sporting KC's summer issues on. The Wayne Rooney thing, that's the real question. What black magic was that? Because that, like, was it 95th minute, like, sprint to go stop a very clueless, deer in the headlights Will Johnson, who either could have just ripped one towards goal and it probably would have gotten there, or played one into the path of an oncoming teammate that I don't remember exactly who it was. I want to say it was El Munir, who could have just curled it over to the right side of the field, switched the field, and Munir would have literally walked it into the net. So, Wayne Rooney stops it all, gets lucky that Will Johnson didn't know what the heck was going on at the moment, despite staring down a wide-open goal and then that ball across. I'm not surprised that the ball was played. I'm more surprised that he made that sprint all the way back. That was impressive. That ball, though, was vintage Wayne Rooney and a wonderful read from Luciano Acosta to get in on the end of that. I was about ready to head out the door on Sunday. That happened, and I was ready to chalk it up as a 2-2 draw. I was about ready to take my dog out. And all of a sudden, I see them, Orlando, running down there to go get that goal. And then Wayne Rooney comes in, and that whole play happens, and I was speechless. And I was very, very glad that I stayed to watch that like last little 30 seconds there. Because I was just waiting for DC to get a winner in that one. Incredible, incredible ending to that week or that game. A really good weekend overall for MLS. A lot of really big matchups and a lot of really entertaining games.
I completely agree with you, Dan. It was kind of funny how I experienced it. I was kind of passively doing a couple of things to prep because, it was Sunday night, so I was prepping. I was going to watch the Seattle-Dallas game while cooking dinner on Sunday night. I had just climbed Mount Evans, which was my third ever 14er in Colorado, which absolutely kicked my butt, but it was wonderful. And then so I was watching through, and I looked up, and I knew that they were going for a corner, and I knew that David Osted was coming forward, and I thought, okay, it's getting cleared out. Okay, I'll look up to see, what's happening with it, because it looks like Will Johnson has a breakaway. And then Wayne Rooney does that. I rewind it to make sure he doesn't get it. To make sure that Wayne Rooney, didn't foul, or how he actually went. I'm like, wow, that was awesome by Wayne Rooney. And then everything from when I hit play from there was just exponential excitement as everything that was happening. You mentioned vintage Wayne Rooney. I want to know how the 5'3" number 10 on DC United is the one who wins that header after already beating Joe Bendick to the ball to give DC United the 2-1 lead. I don't know. Maybe Luciano Acosta was secretly João Plata and then snuck on there with an Acosta jersey, so to speak. I was absolutely impressed with it. But I think on both ends, you have to look at, Wayne Rooney doing something that is in no way his skill set, vintage Wayne Rooney, and then, Luciano Acosta doing something that you would normally think someone his size in Major League Soccer is not physically capable of, let alone actually doing it against a relatively tall back line in Orlando City FC. But let's get to it, folks. We have a great show for you tonight. We now have, depending on the team that you support, anywhere from 12 and I think 9 games is the fewest games remaining in the regular season. So now we're going to do a playoff push preview, going through every single team, what thing they need to do in order to make the playoffs, the probability of that thing happening or how they go about doing that, and then overall their probability of making the playoffs as of, we are August 14th at roughly 9:12 p.m. Eastern. So we'll start in the Eastern Conference, Dan, and we'll start with still at the bottom of the barrel, DC United. They have 21 points on 20 games played, but Dan, they have a bunch of games in hand and they have a bunch of home games left. This is going to be relatively obvious, given that the window is closed now. But at this point, for DC United, it's all about taking maximum points at home against Eastern Conference opponents. The offense is obviously clicking. Luciano Acosta had the hat trick. He was my MLS Player of the Week for the National American Soccer Writers Organization. I think Wayne Rooney is absolutely clicking on all cylinders and has been, you know, I think, you know, at least in the upper echelon, if not as good or better than any DC United fan could have hoped. I think the midfield is figuring things out. I still have my serious doubts about my about their fullback situation, but I think they have other ways of overcoming that. The goaltender situation has been an absolute tire fire, whether it's Steve Clark or David Oestedt. If I'm remembering correctly, I still think they have just one clean sheet in regular season play all year, which is baffling, even by DC United defensive standards. Bill Hamid's back. I think he stabilizes that. I think that's enough for DC United to make a run. I've got to see at least three or four wins in a row, though, before I lock in and say, okay, they've got a legitimate shot at that 60. Let's move on to the team in 10th place, Dan. The Chicago Fire are a literal dumpster fire. How does Veljko Panovic put it out, and is it remotely plausible?
I don't think it's plausible at all. I mean, I look at the team ahead of Chicago, and there's only one team that I genuinely think that is worse than them, and I think it's Orlando. And I think DC United is a better team than Chicago at this rate. They have Bastian Schweinsteiger playing a number 10. That tells you enough about the Chicago Fire situation, in my opinion. And I know, you know, DeLue, is coming back. He got minutes this weekend, but, I just don't see, this Chicago Fire team doing anything better than 8th or 9th in the Eastern Conference. I think the door's pretty much done and dusted on them. Right now, what you need to do is there's a lot of young players within that roster, some homegrown, some kind of developmental places. You've got to be playing Jordan Campbell at left back. You've got to be playing Jordy Mihaljevic every chance you get. You've got to be out there. At this point, I think Chicago Fire will end up bottom in the EB Shock, just because at 25 points, there are 25 games played, which is tied for the most games played in the Eastern Conference in Montreal. They are 7 points back, and they are right now the lowest in points per game setup. They have the second worst goal differential in the Eastern Conference. I don't see them getting much better. They have 7 losses at home, which, you know, if the home road record was just a massive offsetting split, I wouldn't be, you look at that and you think, okay, maybe they just need to play more home games. They picked up a total of 14 points at home all season long in 11-13, so 39 points, so they've dropped more than half the points possible at home. To me, that's just a sign of a bad team. They're going to stay in 10th for now, and they're probably going to end up in at least 11th if they don't turn things around. For me, like I said, biggest thing that they do going forward is, you know, take stock of what you have for going forward. Figure out, well, you know, some pieces that can fit. Give some of the younger guys some playing time and some chance to prove themselves, and then take that into consideration when and if they go through and make some moves this off season. But I'm entirely unimpressed by what I've seen from Chicago all season long. They have the ability to score goals, but they don't have the ability to keep them out. They're like worst goals against in the Eastern Conference, second to Orlando City at 57. And so I just don't see it from this team. You can say that the Fire have been, while the dumpster fire is still raging, the Fire as a soccer playing team has been extinguished for the 2018 season.
Before we move on to Toronto FC, who are 9th in the Eastern Conference, I'm bad at math, listeners. With DC United having played 20 games, we have anywhere from 14 games to 9 games left in the regular season, but right about that, 1/3 of the season left. Moving on, Dan, this is going to sound a little bit counterintuitive, just the fact that, you know, everybody's been panicking about Toronto FC the last two calendar months. I think everybody in that locker room needs to take a chill pill, if not several. Like, go out and get a prescription for this. Chris Mavinga absolutely loses his head when I think Toronto FC got a draw that felt like a win two weekends ago now against Atlanta United, and then Jozy Altidore loses his head and gets a red card, and then ultimately downs them against New York City FC, a game which I thought could have been winnable. Granted, David Villa ended up coming back from injury finally, but so, you know, 6-1, half dozen of another. I think at this point the team just needs to relax. I think they have the emotions and have it fire you up for the game, but have it not lose your head completely to the point where you get red carded or give up PKs, so to speak. And I think the other thing that the team realistically needs to have a conversation about is, I don't know that missing the playoffs for them is all that bad. You look at the guys who have been with this team through the beginning of the 2015 season. They've had, what, not even 10 weeks off combined between the beginning of the 2015 season up until now, just because they were getting ready for CCL and everything, and they were getting ready because they wanted revenge after losing MLS Cup at home, and then they all stuck around to get ready for CCL this past spring. I think getting 2 to 3 months off might actually do this team good, assuming, of course, that they're able to take care of business in the Voyagers Cup second leg tomorrow. But I think the team just needs to take a chill pill. The dice will fall the way they are, and I think if they just calm down, they'll actually find some semblance of rhythm. I don't know that they'll do it. That said, as previously stated, I'm not sure it's a bad thing if they miss the playoffs for the future in terms of them going into 2019. Find a way to retain Giovinco, pay him what he wants, go out there, win CCL, and I think all of this will be forgotten. Moving on, Dan, to another team that's an absolute tire fire. 8th place in the Eastern Conference, Orlando City SC. Orlando, I think, have now lost 13 of 14 games, and their only win was at home against the Toronto B squad. Dan, your thoughts on the Lions, and is the Wildebeest Stampede coming for them?
Yeah, I mean, the only solace that they have is that they can somewhat get draws at home. 5-5-2 at home. They're 2-10 on the road. Their schedule does not get very easy here coming up in the coming weeks, so it doesn't bode well for them if they're going to try and make a push. They're 7 points out of a playoff spot with only one game in hand. They're second worst in terms of points per game. I don't like what I've seen from Orlando. It seems to be that they're a tire fire in the locker room, as we saw reports from Stephen Goff that there was significant pushing and shoving and an altercation that led to Dom Dwyer making peacemaker as some players literally shoved one of their own teammates out of the locker room post-game against DC United. So I don't see Orlando getting any better. They've been through how many coaches? The big question that I have for Orlando going forward is, what are they going to do to not beat Toronto? We go back to Toronto from their initial days where, you know, they came into the league in 2007. Did not make the postseason until the 2015-2016 playoffs. So, or not 2015-2016, but the year before, was it? So, yeah, 2015 MLS Cup, right? The year the Timbers won was the first time that the Toronto FC had actually made the postseason in their franchise history. So, almost 8 years without making the postseason, 8 years of being a dumpster fire team. I Orlando's done four or five now. And I don't see it getting better for them. So they've got some serious questions, some serious looking in the mirror to do, because they continue to bring in these. They paid a lot of money for Yoshi Otun. They paid a lot of money to go get Dom Dwyer. They paid a lot of money for Sasha Kleschman. They paid a lot of money to get Oriel Rizal. And they paid a lot of money for Justin Miram, and that didn't work. And so now we're sitting there, and their backline, they've done nothing ever to actually address their backline issues, which still continues to plague them. 57 goals against, which is actually marginally worse than the Minnesota United, who at the moment, who we consider as one of the worst defensive teams. But their goal differential is literally negative 20. This team's going nowhere. I don't know what to do, because they don't have a whole lot of young, promising prospects that you can say, oh, go play these guys, because the promising prospects that they are playing, that they do have, are already playing. So know what to do going forward, but whatever they do, they got to take a hard look in the mirror, make sure that they end up not being the new Toronto, because that's where they're headed at this rate.
Completely agree with you, Dan. Moving on, New England Revolution, our last team below the red line, sitting in seventh in the Eastern Conference. I owe a little bit of a mea culpa to Brad Friedel and company, Dan. I was not optimistic about his first year in the team. Obviously, they had the entire fallout with Lee Wynn, but he's done a very good job making reclamation projects of some of those pieces who I think we talked about having a lot of potential, but never really achieving it in terms of affecting the results on the field, especially on the attacking side of the ball. I love what he's done with Diego Fagundes. He's made a useful piece of Brian Rowe, albeit a piece that, you know, kind of moves around in terms of what his position and his actual role is from game to game and even within games. I like what he's done with Teal Bunbury. Still not sure how I feel about Juan Agudelo, but, you know, he's been potential that we've been hearing about for a decade and it's never really happened. So at this point, I think he's just one of the guys, as they talked about, and as Brad Friedel lambasted them, you know, during halftime against Philadelphia this past weekend, I think defensive discipline is going to be key for them. They have the offense to figure things out. They've been able to outscore teams. They've got two games in hand on Montreal, who they're only 1 point behind. But I think at this point, they just need to keep their head. Even going back to the Happy Feet, Jay Heaps days of the Revs, when you had hashtag Lee winning and the team that ultimately made it to MLS Cup and lost it in 2014, you know, a lot of the one of the words that was used about them as far as their defensive structure was them being naive. I think they just need to be a little bit calmer defensively. They don't have to improve significantly, but if they can just be 10% better when they don't have the ball, I think it'll be completely fine. It'll make that six seed. I think at this point it's a coin flip just because Montreal is such a wild card for me. Speaking of the Impact, Dan, should we be bracing for the Impact in the Eastern Conference?
No, I don't think so. Actually, I think Montreal will end up, this is where they're at. They have the most games played of any team. They are technically the high watermark, for the team with the most games played. 30 points. 1.2, there's at least, the New England Revolution are ahead of them in terms of points per game. I think DC United, they have 5 games in hand on Montreal. If you take even then, like I think DC United's probably closer to a one game type team. So you do that, 1.5 points per game kind of puts them over those 5 games. Kind of end up at it's like 7.5, I guess. My math's bad, but like seven, I mean that's 7.5 points that puts them really really close to Montreal. I think New England and DC United are honestly better teams than the Impact. They're very hot and cold. They had a really good month of June and July, and after that, they have significantly cooled off. They don't look that great. Negative 10 goal differential doesn't set well with me. I look at teams like a DC United and a Toronto FC, Montreal and New England Revolution, and I think Montreal Impact are in danger because I think all three of those teams are a better team than the Impact at this rate. So what do they do? They can't do much else right now because they can't add to the roster. They haven't really been able to fully surround Piatti with a continuous serviceable amount of talent to help supplement his ability. Their striker situation is still Matteo Mancosu, and then they added Quincy Amerequois, who hasn't scored a goal in a really long time, professionally. And, you know, he is kind of getting long in the tooth as well. So I don't know how it all works out for Montreal. They don't get a whole lot of goals outside of Piatti. If they can find that, then maybe I think they'll be fine going forward. But, you know, I just don't think they're terrible on the road. They have an okay home record. They dropped too many points at home for me to consider them a significant playoff threat.
Moving.
I was just going to say, for me, I count the Montreal Impact out on this. I think they're just kind of benefiting from the fact that they played more games than anyone else while holding on to that sixth spot East.
Moving on to the second wildcard team we have right now in the Eastern Conference, Philadelphia Union. And Dan's kind of, I also owe some credit to Philadelphia just as I did with New England. I think if you're Philly, I think you just keep doing what you're doing. Hashtag trust the process. I think Alejandro Bedoya has come into his own this season. I really like what the defense has done, especially with all the teenagers. Then there are Austin Trusty and company. I think they've grown into their own in Major League Soccer. We know what what they're going to do in the up front. You know, CJ Sapong finally scored a goal. You know, I don't know that they're not a great team in the Eastern Conference. I don't think they're going to be a real threat, but I think at this point, just make the playoffs and then have that experience, whatever it's going to end up being. I think that's going to be proof that the trajectory that they're going on is improving. And then from there, look to improve in 2019. That said, if I'm a Philadelphia Union fan, Dan, I would totally take missing the playoffs if it means I win the US Open Cup final the next couple weeks. But right now, I don't think Philly needs to change anything. Just keep doing what you're doing. If nothing else, it's growing pains that are going to make you a better team going into 2019. Moving on, Columbus Crew in the fourth seed. Dan, what do you have going on with Columbus, and what do they need to improve on? And in particular, they're kind of in that tweeners point, at least for me, where I see kind of, you know, the top three seeds in the East, or as it is, it's Atlanta and the New Yorks, and then there's kind of this other chasm behind them. You know, they're kind of, they're 9 points up on Philly, but they're 8 points behind, they're 8 points behind NYCFC. It's almost like they're the meat in the Eastern Conference playoff sandwich. Do you see them falling either way, or are they going to stay where they are?
I think they're going to stay where they are. I think the only thing I can see in here is maybe a Philadelphia getting hot and kind of outpacing them for a little bit. But I think they're pretty much locked into this fourth spot. They have a nine point cushion. If you want to take points in hand, you have a six or the games in hand thing. They at least have a 6 point cushion over the Philadelphia Union. They have a lights out keeper, is amazing. The problem is I don't think they have enough offense, at the moment. They don't have enough, at least finishing offense. Now, they did just get Justin Merrim. Justin Merrim looked pretty good, kind of semi-dangerous, in their home game against, Houston this week. I like what I saw from, you know, the goal, from Justin Zardes. Probably shouldn't have counted because, Patrick Mullins was offside as he kind of went for that ball. But, Justin made the run, took it, finished it. You know, he did his job. If Merrim can pitch in five goals and a couple assists here, through the end of the season for them, then I think you can kind of, yeah, I think you really kind of should watch out for them in the playoffs, because I think they have the defense enough. They have the defense to kind of run the Eastern Conference pretty well. Problem is I don't think they have the goal scoring to really really take hold of that fourth spot and make it, you know, make the East, a four-headed monster instead of a three-headed monster. So it's going to take the goals for them to figure it out. I'll say this, as a parting, they remind me a lot of last year's Sporting Kansas City team. Solid defensively, great keeper. They do great defensive work. They can get a goal here and there, but the problem is that they have really hard time scoring goals and getting results on the road. They got 4 wins on the road. They got 10 at home. You know, they're getting points. They're winning games. Or no, sorry. I was looking at New York City FC. Let's take that back. 8 wins on the road, 3 at home. If they can get a couple more road wins, and then kind of see that goal scoring spike, I will definitely take the Columbus Crew seriously. But, you know, for me, I think they're definitely, the class above, let's say, you know, the five, from Philadelphia to Toronto, excluding Orlando City, in the Eastern Conference table. I think they're definitely class above that, but I think the lack of goal scoring just puts them, standalone in their own middle class, underneath the top three.
Moving on to that top bun, New York City FC sitting in third, 47 points off of 24 games played. I think it's going to come down to the wire as far as these top three teams are concerned, and I think one of those three will end up winning the Supporters' Shield in 2018. New York City FC, I think, is in a good place in terms of actually trying to be successful in the playoffs. I don't know that I'd put money on them right now to win the Supporters' Shield or finish any higher than they are. Dominic Torrent has had a little bit of a learning curve in coming to Major League Soccer. They finally got David Villa back. I think he's going to be healthy. They're figuring things out a little bit better. I think at this point they just need to take another month to work things out. Maybe he gets a little bit better relationship with the players. They reworked David Villa into the lineup. They've had to play and rely on the Maxi Moraleses and the Trudori Shrades, if I'm pronouncing that correctly, the Owen Burgetts a little bit more. I think at this point they just need another month to gel. They don't need to be peaking right now. They need to be peaking right as we turn the calendar calendar in October and when September ends. So I think they just need to work. I just think they need to focus on that right now. Just gel and then figure it out once you get to October. At that point, I don't think you need to worry about seeding as much as focus on playing well so that you can beat the teams that are better than you. That said, I still have a lot of doubts about New York City FC just in terms of doing anything in the playoffs. Not because of anything that they do, but just because with the constraints they have with their home games being played at Yankee Stadium, I think against the elite offenses, the Atlantas, the New Yorks, Columbus on a good day, I don't know that they keep those opponents out of the back of the net. And just, we know how valuable road goals can be, especially if it's in that first leg in the Eastern Conference, to where I would think if this is the team that was playing on, you know, the 75 by 120 yard pitch, they'd be okay. But with the way they need to play, it's just not conducive to getting clean sheets against good teams in a home leg to a playoff game. Moving on, Dan, we've got the New York Red Bulls, the other side of New York. What do you make of them?
I actually think they're the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. I love what I've seen from New York Red Bulls. Here's the difference for me between the Red Bulls and between Atlanta United. Atlanta United, you know, they score a ton of goals. They've got five more goals, but they've surrendered five more goals. So the backline issues. The one thing that I have with them is they have yet to really go out and dominate and to really like put to sleep a good team. You know, anytime they play a good team, a very, very good team, they have problems. They've lost at home to Sporting Kansas City. They've lost. They did lose at home. I forget the other team who beat them at home, but someone else came in and beat them at home. You know, they've been able to beat up on the Revolution, the Orlandos, the Montreal Impact of the world, but they have yet to really handle good teams. I see this New York Red Bulls team, and they've got a lot of fantastic results, both home and away. They get points against the big teams. They've got the points per game in their hand right now, and especially if it comes with the quarter shield. That defense is incredibly staunch. They have the best defensive record in the league, and they have the goal scoring to go with it. 23 goals against 45 goals for, which is good for second or third in the Western, in the Eastern Conference. That defense, combined with their ability to score goals and their ability to do a whole lot of work without having the ball, sets them up perfectly, I think, for playing a lot of these possession-based teams like New York, like Atlanta. It's kind of their – the New York Red Bulls are going to be the Achilles heel, the heel of these two teams in the Eastern Conference. For me, they are the absolute best team in the Eastern Conference and at portions this year, the best team in the league. I like this New York Red Bulls team a lot. I wouldn't be shocked if they won the Supporters Shield. Even if they don't, I still think they're going to take the Eastern Conference because I think they're pretty, I won't say they're head and shoulders the best team in the East, because I really like Atlanta and I think New York City FC might have something to say about it, especially at a home game, you know, on that post pitch. But, this New York Red Bulls team, for my money, has been the best team in the Eastern Conference all year long.
I'm going to agree with you on this one, Dan. I think for the key for Atlanta and for Tata Martinez is unfortunately something that he's never really been good at, going back to his time coaching internationally and then at Barcelona. Squad rotation, Tata. Squad rotation. The one beef on him when he was coaching at Barcelona was that he always stuck with the exact same guys, was able to vary the lineup and was able to vary the structure in the game, but just rode his starters a little bit too much and eventually they broke down. That works in a regular season in a European campaign where you're focused on the regular season and not knockout game. That doesn't work when you play the full regular season and then you've got to go into playoffs. At some point, these guys are going to start to break down. You saw Miguel Almiron erode. That affected other players in their midfield as well last season. Once you've actually got everything locked up, obviously I think, you know, run out Josep Martinez until he at least gets and breaks the 27 goal record. I think he's got a really good chance of it against Columbus this upcoming Saturday. But I think after that, you know, once you've got it settled out, don't be afraid to mix things up and then rotate guys out. That'll leave you a little bit fresher for, you know, maybe a penultimate weekend or a decision day. And then obviously going into the playoffs. That said, I agree with you, Dan. I think New York Red Bulls are the team to beat in the Eastern Conference. Hashtag BWP. Moving on to the Western Conference, Dan, we will start with the San Jose Earthquakes. Is there anything that we can make of this? Or, you know, should we just, you know, should they just, you know, forfeit the rest of the season?
I'll never say forfeit the rest of the season because we don't have a good draft pick to tank for. I'm never of the belief that you should rely on the MLS draft to develop any kind of young talent for your team. If you can get a serviceable piece out of it, then cool. So draft doesn't work. You can't tank for that. They're sitting on 16 points. They're in danger of being the Wooden Spoon team. While they have looked better in recent weeks, they looked, you know, there's a couple issues that they had in Colorado. Vaco Kwasniewski does not pass the ball to Chris Wondolowski in a wide open situation where Wando would have deposited at home. Leads to some yelling and frustration by Wando towards Mikael Staré. Leads to more yelling and frustration and a giant team clock. And then Shea Salinas throws an elbow and gets sent out of a game. And then they let up a soft closing goal for Colorado to escape the 3 points. So I don't see this team doing any better than last place in the Western Conference. The question is, can they pick up more points than maybe a bad Chicago or Orlando? I doubt it at this point. They're terrible, frankly. I don't know what to do with them at this point. The best thing that they can do, take stock, find out what pieces they're going to keep around for next year, and then just shred whatever they have, whatever they can shred. Whatever papers, whatever contracts they can shred, shred them. Point, because it's a mess. And if they don't get rid of Mikael Staré after this, I would be absolutely shocked, considering how bad it has been all season long.
11th place in the Western Conference, that is the Colorado Rapids, 23 points on 23 games played. They find themselves 12 points below the red line here, Dan. I have gotten a little bit more optimistic with the last couple of games they've had. Kellen Acosta has been an absolute godsend in the midfield, and Hudson, I think, finally was willing to swallow his pride and move away from the 3-5-2 into a 4-4-2, in which a lot of the things that they're actually trying to do with and without the ball are relatively the same, but it just simplifies everything in terms of where players are supposed to be, how they go about the rotations, who covers for who, and the actual roles. I think at this point, you know, they've done a good job of stopping the bleeding with those two moves, the change in formation and tactic, and Kellen Acosta coming in the field. He and Jack Price are two peas in a pod in the middle of the park. But that said, now they need to build on this with consistency. Every single time we've seen the Rapids maybe take a little bit of an uptick, somebody on one side of the ball gets really good run of form, they end up having a stinker of a game, or they go on a losing streak, or they're just not able to be consistent. Whether or not they make the playoffs, and I'm of the mind that they will not make the playoffs, they need to do something to show that they've got something building for 2019. The best way of doing that is to build some consistency in performance and then get some results against good teams. I think the Rapids have, I want to say, 12 games or 11 games left in the regular season, 9 of which are against teams currently in the playoffs. They'll be playing 2 of them this week. The LA Galaxy, who by the time this pod is out, will know what the final score of that game is on Tuesday. And this coming Sunday, they'll be at Bank of California Stadium in their first ever game against LAFC. Can they build on their performances, in particular with good, solid performances individually and collectively in the midfield? And can they get results against other playoff teams? I still don't think they're making the playoffs, but they need to do that to make the playoffs, and they need to do that if the remaining 11 games in the season are going to count for anything in terms of trying to be better in 2019 than they were this year. Moving on, Dan, we have the Houston Dynamo, who I kind of had to do a double take, Dan, and realize how kind of bad they've been falling. Maybe I just think that they're doing good in Open Cup, so then they were doing good in the regular season. This team is inconsistent. What do they need to find other than consistency?
Well, this Houston team is an absolute mess, I think. I find themselves... Like you said, they find themselves in the U.S. Open Cup final, which is kind of shocking, but not, because they've had a lot of home games. This is a team that tends to do well at home, terrible on the road. Same old issues. But the thing is that they keep losing games late in situations. I don't know what it is about that. Their game plan, by and large, has been to attack, and kind of get ahead, and then sit back and wait and ping people on the counter as they're attacking you in the final 10-15 minutes. That's what happened for them last year. It worked. They were able to defend through that. They have not been able to defend through that this year. They miss AJ De La Garza. They miss a whole lot of pieces. Philippe Senderos has been okay, but he's slow and old, and I don't think he can last 80 minutes even, which is why they've given up so many points in the end of games that they have. I just haven't seen it consistently from Houston. I think they're a dangerous team if they get hot. The problem is I think we've already seen the best of them in their hot streak at the beginning of the season. I don't buy this team in the long run. They have temper issues. They have, they're a very undisciplined team, which I think in part leads to their issue with closing out games I don't see it from this team. I think they're better. It's crazy because I think they're better than 10th in this conference. But at the moment, their form has not shown it. And the fact that they can't close out games means they may end up finishing worse off than they actually are.
Moving on, Dan, we have Minnesota United. We've talked about them the last couple of weeks with everything that happened that ultimately led to them trading Christian Ramirez to LAFC. I don't really know what to make of this team, Dan, because unlike every other team that you have above them in the standings right now, they at least have something good going for them, either in terms of what they're doing in the midfield, what they're doing in attack, what they're doing defensively. Maybe they're really good on set pieces. And, you know, Minnesota United essentially uprooted a lot of their offense in this transfer window, bringing in another DP midseason and then trading Christian Ramirez, who is a proven attacker in this league, and doing all of that while not really addressing the gaping hole that is the number six position and having anything remotely close to a competent defense. I think at this point, pretty much it's can Dominic Quintero put their team on their back and score a bunch of points for my fantasy team? Because they've got issues on both sides of the ball. I think they're in a position to do something about it. You know, they're in the race, but they've got so many holes to plug in the sinking ship that I just think they're going to sink before they're able to jump Seattle or Vancouver or anybody else. Moving on, Dan, speaking of the Seattle Sounders, I think winners of their last five, if not, they're on a really good unbeaten streak. They got a big win against Dallas, albeit with a slightly crazy red card situation. Nico Lodero is balling out. Are they actually going to do this again and make us have to watch them in the playoffs?
I think they'll make the playoffs. I don't think that they're a serious contender. They have significant goal scoring issues despite the fact that Nico Lodero was balling out. Raul Ruiz Diaz is a guy who needs the ball at his feet. This team plays better offensively, I think, when Will Bruin's on the field. Ruiz Diaz, I think if they really wanted to kind of change things up, I think kind of a 4-1, like a 4-4-2 diamond with a narrow midfield, kind of clogging up that midfield space. Let Ruiz Diaz kind of float around Will Bruin and pick up that stuff, and let Lodero's playmaking ability kind of play in both of them as well. I just don't see I don't see a serious threat from Seattle, but I do see them potentially making the playoffs. I like what they've done in recent weeks. They have a very staunch defense, only 26 goals against, but they only have 26 goals for. So that goal scoring issues, I think they've got a lot of injuries on that end of the field as well. Victor Rodriguez can't stay healthy, which is kind of lends to my idea that I think they should kind of cut down on having a wide player and just go with a deep midfield and have Lodero and Ruiz Diaz float around while Will Bruin holds the ball and kind of either distributes it to them or picks up service and the second balls into the area. I think that would kind of suit all the pieces that they have at this moment, but I don't see Smetzer kind of going away with what they have and what's been working. But what they have right now, which is that 4-2-3-1. But like I said, if they do that switch, I think they could actually be more dangerous than they are. But for the moment being, I think they're no better than a 5 or 6 seed in the Western Conference. But they're definitely not 8th in the Western Conference, considering their current run of form.
Moving on, Dan, we have the Vancouver Whitecaps, who are in the last spot below the red line in the Western Conference. I'm going to ask a question I feel like I've been asking Carl Robinson for the entire year, Dan, if not possibly 2 years or more. Vancouver Whitecaps, who are you? Do you want to play with the ball or do you not want to play with the ball? Do you press in the midfield? Do you sit back and do you try to counter? Are you purely just the Alphonso Davies United, rely on him, so to speak? Are you the team that loses at home to a bad team? Are you the team that is able to go on the road and get a result against Portland and, you know, and break their 15-game unbeaten streak and one of the best home records in Major League Soccer? I have no idea who you are. I have no idea what your style is. I have no idea about your formation and your tactical plans. I know you're bad at defense. I know you've been rotating out forwards, and I know your midfield is, you know, kind of a jumbling of the same players but in slightly different roles, and the only regular consistent piece you have is Alphonso Davies, who's not going to be with you after this season. And at this point, I mean, I don't know what to say more about this team, Dan, just because I feel like this is an issue, or this is a question that they've been trying to figure out for the last couple of months, if not the last 18 months, and I have no reason to believe that they're going to figure it themselves out. I think they have enough talent to potentially challenge for and get the 6th seed. I personally wouldn't bet on it. I'd give it maybe, you know, like a 60-40 not making the playoffs. That said, if they do make the playoffs, I think they're probably getting blown out in that road wildcard game, and we're not going to remember the season at all as far as the Caps are concerned. concerned. Moving on, Dan, RSL currently in the sixth seed in the Western Conference. What's Mike Pecky chewing over, and what does he need to do differently?
Well, they got to figure out how to get points on the road. We've talked about kind of the points system, the way the point setup is for the red line. And in past years, 50 points pretty much guarantees you to the playoffs. I don't see Real Salt Lake currently in that 50-point setup, especially with their road form. They have only picked up a total of 5 points on the road as opposed to only dropping 9 points at home. So they dropped 9 points at home, but only 1-5 on the road. I don't know what to make out of this RSL team. They remind me a lot of last year's Houston Dynamo. They kind of play well on the counter. They frustrate a whole lot of teams. They play really well at home. They play terrible on the road. I don't know entirely what to make of them, but if there's any team that's in this top six that I think is the quote unquote pretender, it is Real Salt Lake for my money. I just don't see it from them, over the long haul. Too much inconsistency. A little too young still. I think they kind of need a true, I think they have a true playmaker. I just don't think that they have another true threat to really take away a whole lot of attention off of Rusnak and his playmaking ability. You know, if Corey Baird can get hot again, here, I think they'll be fine. They could be fine as a striker, but there's nobody to really truly draw attention away from Rusnak. And their back line has been shaky at times, and Nick Raimondo is only getting older. So I don't see it from this RSL team. If there's any team that's going to drop for one of the the only teams in the Western Conference that I can see potentially leapfrogging them is Minnesota, Seattle, and maybe Vancouver. I still buy Minnesota over both Seattle and Vancouver. They've had a kind of a very congested schedule in recent weeks, and their road form is terrible as well. So, you know, you got a couple of bad road teams. You look at, you know, the two teams who've been able to pick up points on the road have been Vancouver and Seattle. And I think that's going to be the difference here because they will pick up points at home as they go down this stretch. The question is, have they picked up enough points on the road? I don't think Real Salt Lake will do it. I think Seattle and Vancouver or Vancouver will end up doing it and thus leapfrogging RSL. So for me, they end up being the odd man out despite being over the red line at the moment.
Moving on, Dan, let's head down to Southern California. Let's go to Bank of California Stadium. LAFC has gotten rocked the last couple of weeks, scratched out of U.S. Open Cup after PKs against Houston, you know, got a loss against New York Red Bulls a couple of weeks ago, lost their first game at Bank of California Stadium over the weekend, and guess what? They get to play Zlatan sometime in the next couple of weeks. What do you make of LAFC? Are they going to be able to stabilize it, or are they just one Lorenzo Simon injury away? I'm knocking on woods. I'm not trying to jinx anybody. Away from just having the season really be for not given all the promise they had.
Yeah, I think, I mean, they are kind of one more significant injury away. You know, rest to Tyler Miller the other night for the young Honduran keeper whose name is escaping me, and he didn't look all that great. Tyler Miller goes down. I'm not so sold on their goalkeeper situation. And, you know, you have, like you said, you have a Lawrence Simon pretty much arms in the air at the moment for LAFC. So I have a hard time with them going forward, but I think they're good enough to still be in the playoffs despite the fact that they don't have a number six, a functioning number six. You know, Benny Failhaber is a very good number eight. He is not a number six because he gets too far forward, wants to venture too far into the box. That's just his nature. You can't change that in him, and he's not the kind of guy who's going to patiently sit in front of the center backs and just ping 30-yard diagonal balls. That's not Benny Failhaber, if you've ever seen him play. So they have some issues that they need to work out. I think Sporting Kansas City really exposed those issues, because for as much attacking talent as they have, if you come up against a good defensive team, a team that has a good defensive game plan against you and that has enough speed on the counter, that they'll be able to break through and get a couple of goals off of you and thus get LAFC out. And I think that doesn't bode well for them in the playoffs, where at times you do see teams shut up shop and play on the counter when they are on the road in a first leg. And I think that could ultimately hurt LAFC in the long run. So I don't see it from them this year. Maybe if Mark Anthony Kay was still healthy, I think they'd be in a different position. I think they'd be up ahead of Sporting Kansas City, knocking on Dallas' door. But Mark Anthony Kay is really the only number six defensive type player that they add a difference maker in that aspect of the field. They need something like that. It's too late to get something like that, and they kind of are what they are. They'll pick up points as they go. Season, but I don't see them as much of a contender with the current injury issues that they have and their lack of defensive awareness in the midfield just due to player personnel that they have.
Let's drive a little bit further south down to StubHub Center with the LA Galaxy, Dan, and it's been pretty much the exact same story for them since Zlatan arrived with the squad. They're really, really good offensively. They've changed things up in the midfield that has found some semblance of stability, but still they can't seem to keep all of their DPs healthy at the exact same time. Jonah Dos Santos has had some good moments, some bad moments. He and Perry Kitchen don't really have a whole lot of chemistry. I read a stat somewhere here, Dan, that since Cinco de Mayo, Giovanni Dos Santos has just won 90-minute appearance with the LA Galaxy, which is just baffling given his injury situation and, you know, obviously how disinterested he was in doing anything with a soccer ball prior to, you know, the final roster selection for El Tri going into the World Cup. They've got a really great offense. They've got Ola Kamara. Alessandrini had an MRI after his injury against Minnesota over the weekend. It is not going to be serious. He will be out for the game today against Colorado, but it's not going to be a long-term thing. He's not out for the rest of the season. So I think they've got enough of a patchwork in order for the offense to be MLS contender level, but I just have absolutely no faith in that defense and Dominic Kimmeer and Siggy Smith to fix it whatsoever. David Bingham has gradually gotten better as the season's gone along. Michael Ciani proven to be a bust in Major League Soccer. I don't have a whole lot of faith in Jorgen Selvik. And, you know, they don't seem to have any interest in rotating the squad other than when they just got schedule congestion like they have had the last couple of weeks. So I'm not sure what to make of this team. If this team, you know, they're in a similar situation to Minnesota United, and they have a bunch of really good attacking pieces. They have a dominant centerpiece. For Minnesota, it was Quintero. For LA Galaxy, it was Zlatan Ibrahimovic. Their defense is better than Minnesota, but, you know, I think they're better enough in all of those places to where they can make the playoffs. I don't know if they're better enough to win MLS Cup. If they are, then I think Zlatan has to be your, you know, he would be, you know, I think he would have to have an MVP caliber 3 or 4 months here for LA Galaxy to challenge the FC Dallas's and the Sporting Kansas City's. Moving on, we'll head up to Cascadia, Dan, to Portland Timbers, who just had their long winning and undefeated streak beaten this past weekend by the Vancouver Whitecaps. For Portland, I'm sitting pat with everything that they're doing. I think they figured things out defensively with what Mabiala was able to do at center back. Diego Valeri's been playing great. They finally have Sebastian Blanco healthy that I think is going to help them, man. I think at this point they're setting pat. I don't know that they need to or should try and expend enough energy to try and get that number one spot in the Western Conference. I think either way, they're going to finish in the top three, and they're going to be one of the contenders coming out of the West. They've got Diego Valeri, they've got Samuel Armenteros, who's cooled off a little bit. My one real concern with them is just their age. You know, you've got Diego Valeri, but he's on the wrong side of 30. Diego Chara, you know, has a lot of miles on his leg, so to speak. You know, can they hold up long enough to finish strong in the regular season, maybe challenge for the Shield, though I doubt it, and then probably, you know, make a good run at MLS Cup. I don't know how I feel about that, but how many years have we been saying eventually LeBron's going to fall off the cliff? I like having LeBron on my team if I'm trying to make a run in the playoffs. I like having Diego Valera on my team if I'm trying to win MLS Cup. Let's move out East, Dan, to Sporting Kansas City. What are you making of Sporting right now?
Well, they finally got healthy, as I said before. We started this segment here. This team was, for my money, the best team in the Western Conference. Before they hit their rough patch with a whole lot of injuries, they will be without Jimmy Medrano for the rest of the regular season. There's a slight chance that Kyrie Shelton comes back. Brad Evans has not been able to get on the field for an MLS game yet. He'll get healthy and go play in a USL match and then have a setback. They have three long-term injuries that aren't really going to play a huge part for them going forward. Everything else is as is going forward. They've found some depth and some youth players that they didn't expect to have depth. Sporting Kansas City were not expecting Jalen Lindsay or Gianluca Busio or Juan Kazane Kamal to be fully ready to go and step in if called upon. They have proven that they can. That's been a huge development for their depth, as well as just being able to add Daniel Shalvey and Johnny Russell on the wings and have Christian Namath up there up top, which I presume will be the plan going forward. Diego Rubio did really well against LAFC, played with his hair on fire for, you know, 65, 70 minutes. And I think that might be the plan with him, is he's done better in a sub and done better in situations where it's set, where it's kind of like go out, play balls to the wall, pedal to the metal, for a good 30 to 45 minutes, maybe even 60. We'll pull you, we'll put someone else in. And it kind of, that's kind of where he does his best damage, where he just goes, it goes hard and creates havoc instead of having to try and pace himself over 90 minutes. I think this team, the attack is definitely there this year. The defense, when healthy, has been there. They looked a lot better in recent weeks, especially going down to LAFC and getting a road shutout. That was huge. Against some of the best offensive teams, they've gone in and gotten road shutouts. LA Galaxy, LAFC, Atlanta United, being a very notable one as well. This is a team that's got a good defense despite their sporadic issues there. I think they're better than Dallas for sure. I don't know if they're better than Portland. Portland sitting below them. They, you know, they're a huge run. They're a good team. We'll see this weekend. That's going to be a massive matchup in Kansas City on Saturday night. So that's, you know, that's one you've got to pay attention to. That right there can kind of change the tide in the Western Conference. And with Dallas kind of experiencing another little swoon, having some issues without Mauro Diaz, they lose to the Quakes, lose to Seattle after getting a huge win in Kansas City. They're kind of falling off a bit. I don't buy them as the best team in the Western Conference, but I don't know if I buy any of the top three as the best team head and shoulders in the Western Conference. But it's pretty clear that those are the upper echelon. Sporting Kansas City, their goal all along has been to get a home playoff game. I think they're good enough to do that this year. Question, I think that this is a team that can make a deep run in the playoffs, but we'll have to see how their number one focus is continuing to keep the pace up, pick up points at home, pick up points on the road, and get through. And I think the Sporting Kansas City team in the end, they've got a light schedule coming up here. I think they're going to definitely solidify themselves as at least a top four seed in the Western Conference.
Moving on to our last team of this MLS Cup playoff push analysis, Dan, we have, of course, FC Dallas sitting pretty at number one in the Western Conference. But, Dan, since the Mauro Diaz transfer, FC Dallas are just 4-5-1. They're really good at home, but they haven't been great on the road. You know, a really tough result for them this past weekend at Seattle. But, you know, Dominic Baggi gets his first goal since being traded from the Colorado Rapids in exchange for Kellen Acosta. My big concern at this point for Dallas is they kind of jettisoned two of their big talent pieces who were kind of, you know, the front stars for them in years past. You know, when Urruti's kind of cooled off, you know, he kind of goes, you know, 2 months on, 2 months off. Can he get his mojo back, so to speak? Michael Barrios has been a little bit inconsistent, though he looked really good in their last home game. So I don't know what to make of this team right now. When I look at it, all of their other competition in the Western Conference, you mentioned, you know, Sporting Kansas City finally getting healthy. Do they have an elite superstar, so to speak? Maybe not in the context of some of the other players, but they don't have any distinct weaknesses. You know, I wonder what's going on in Jesse Gonzalez's head right now, given the last couple of weeks that he's had. LA Galaxy, bad defense, but guess what? They have Zlatan. LAFC, they have Carlos Vela. All of their competition that's competing with them, trying to catch up to them, that's going to give them a run for their money in the playoffs, they all have an elite superstar that can go out there and can single-handedly win a game. And right now, you know, Oscar Brea kind of did a little bit of a morph during the transfer window and essentially brought in teenagers. I still absolutely trust Profane in the long term of it, but every single year it's kind of FC Dallas is good. They're bringing up a bunch of young players, but they're never able to actually win it. You know, they got the supporter shield the last couple of years. They won the Open Cup when they won the double, so to speak, but they're never able to do it when it comes to locking down a top seed in the Western Conference or actually winning come playoffs. And the difference now is that they've got less experienced players. I think that they're almost in a similar situation to Philly, albeit from a better standing point, in that let's just play out the rest of the season, let's trust the process, and worst case scenario, this is experience for building on 2019. That said, I don't think this team finishes top in the Western Conference by the end of the season. I bet money on Sporting Kansas City or Portland. That does it for our playoff push, folks. Dan, it is time to go to Pick'ems. We will start tomorrow, Wednesday, or today if you're listening on Wednesday. Toronto FC hosting Vancouver in the Voyagers Cup, Dan. This will be at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. In leg one, we got a 2-2 draw at not BMO Field, excuse me, BC Place. So Toronto has two road goals, albeit one on possibly the worst road own goal in Canadian Cup history. Dan, who you got? Who's lifting the trophy?
I'm gonna go with Vancouver. I love this I want to see another MLS team in the CONCACAF Champions Cup. You know, Toronto already are in with Supporters Shield, with MLS Cup. Vancouver winning this can put another MLS team in that round. In that round of 16, initially up to 6, I believe, which is quite exciting for me. So get Vancouver in there; it'll be fun. I would love for Vancouver to win. I think Toronto most likely will get it done, but I'm definitely pulling for Vancouver in this one. I'll give a wild prediction and say Vancouver gets the upset with a 2-1 win in Toronto.
Josie Altidore suspended for the next MLS game, which means I presume he'll be starting and playing this whole game. Toronto's has had a very tumultuous up and down season. I think they need to salvage it on some level. Voyager Cup might not matter to any American MLS fan, but it absolutely matters to the Canadian fans. Excuse me, I can't talk, folks. I like Toronto in this one, if nothing else, because I think they're the better team. They're playing at home, and they've got 2 road goals, and I don't know what to make of Vancouver at this point, Dan. Give me Toronto. I'll say we'll go 4-3 on aggregate at the end of it. Moving on to Saturday, folks, we'll be looking at the nationally televised games on ESPN at 4 o'clock Eastern. Seattle Sounders hosting the LA Galaxy. Dan, who you got and why?
I'm going to go with the Seattle Sounders on this one, just because their defensive form in recent weeks has been good. Zlatan on turf doesn't seem like a no-go, considering he already has a midweek game and playing on the back-to-back days. We already know what that's like. I'm going to go Seattle on this one at home. We'll go 2-1 to the Sounders.
Retweet. Moving on to one of the late night games we have in the Eastern Conference. Big matchup, giving the teams that we just talked about. Dan, Sporting Kansas City hosting the Portland Timbers, 7:30 p.m. Eastern on ESPN+. Dan, I presume you'll be there. What are you looking for as Sporting take on one of their Western Conference rivals?
I actually won't be there. I will be standing next to a couple of great dudes as we watch one of our friends get married. I will be in Seattle at a wedding, so I won't get to be there. I think this one ends up as a draw. I'm going to go with a 1-1 draw in this one. Last year's matchup was a 1-1 draw with a Diego Valeri golazo and a Daniel Shaloui beautiful finish that ended up being his first MLS goal and kind of his arrival, his moment where he says, hey, I'm here, I'm ready to go now. We've seen him expand on that this season. I'll go with a repeat of last year's Sporting Kansas City Portland game at Kansas City. Go with a 1-1 draw. These teams have drawn each other. I believe the last 3 meetings between these teams have been a 0-0 or a 1-1 draw. I wouldn't be surprised if it ends up something like that on Saturday.
I'm going to go with a 0-0 on this one, Dan. I think, you know, save for a couple of the gaffes that Portland had over the weekend against Vancouver, both of these teams defensively have been on a really, really good run of form. I just feel like this has a 0-0 draw on me, you know, with maybe both teams getting at least a 1.5x goals, you know, maybe a couple really good defensive moves, maybe a couple really good opportunities that are shanked and both goalies standing on their heads. I think it'll be a 0-0. Moving on to Sunday, folks, an absolute battle that we've got here. Atlanta United hosting Columbus Crew. This will be at 4 p.m. Eastern on ESPN. Plus, Dan, who you got and why?
Atlanta host Columbus. Atlanta going to get this one done. Columbus is not a very good road team. I think it's going to be 1-0. It'll be squeaky bum for Atlanta. I think they get a late winner in this one. But, you know, Atlanta's too good at home. Columbus too inconsistent on the road in terms of getting goals. 1-0 to Atlanta United.
Atlanta has trouble at home against stout defensive teams that are well talented. I'm going to take a 1-1 draw on this. Give me a Zach Steffen special, and just for the shiggles, we'll go with Giassi Zardes with a thumping header goal past the bald wall that is Brad Guzan. Moving on, Dan. This will be our last. I think this is the last game of the weekend. DC United hosting New England Revolution, 7:30 p.m. Eastern at Audi Field. This will be on FS1. Dan, who you got and why?
DC United, Wayne Rooney, Audi Field.
That's it? Okay, I completely agree with you, Dan. I'm going to say 3-1 to DC United. I don't think they'll leave it late or that it'll be completely close, but I think we'll be looking for a bonkers game. I agree with you. I think Wayne Rooney's going to ball out. And how about, let's go with Darren Maddox getting a goal off the bench and then maybe throwing a little bit of eye shade, stanky eye at Ben Olsen from the bench. That is it for us, folks. Dan, it is time for last words. Where can people find you on the Twitter machine, and do you have any closing thoughts?
You can find me on the Twitter machine at SperryDaniel94. And any last thoughts? I'm actually speechless today. Got no thoughts on this as we close it out. Just enjoy the big matchups that we've got over the weekend, and I will do my best to take a look and pay attention as I'm busy with one of my best friend's weddings this weekend.
Excellent stuff, Panna. In the interest of me getting ready for the Rapids taking on the Galaxy, I also have no last words. Follow me on Twitter at LWSMattPollard. Check out all of our content at LastWordOnSoccer.com. You can follow us across all social media platforms at LastWordSC. We are officially on Instagram, so check out LastWordOnSoccer on Instagram. Thank you to our sponsor, Roughneck Scarves. They are the official scarf supplier of Major League Soccer, the United Soccer League, and U.S. Soccer in general. Get your custom scarves for your group, your team, or just yourself at RoughneckScarves.com. That is it for us, folks. We will see you next week.